We've been talking about neighborhoods all week, you know, those boxy little houses on perfect streets with perfect lawns and perfect people.
And the people in houses all went to the university where they were put in boxes and they all came out the same.
Now that could describe the houses on Sandringham Road in Brighton, New York, outside of Rochester. But Brighton resident, teacher, and author Peter Lovenheim doesn't think those outward external qualities really get to what makes a good, healthy neighborhood. And so he set out to explore his own neighborhood in some more depth, you might say. The result? His new book, In the Neighborhood, The Search for Community on an American Street, One Sleepover at a Time. Lovenheim definitely got beyond waving to his neighbors from the safety of his own driveway.
I think I'd like to do more than just wave because so many of us do have like a wave high-by relationship with our neighbors, which is pretty superficial and doesn't get us very far. So, you know, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to kind of chat over the fence or hedge once in a while and get to know each other.
One of the premises of your work here is that the health of a community really can be determined by the quality of these neighbor-to-neighbor relationships. How do you go about, first of all, coming up with that and then measuring it or even just observing it?
Well, I think that a healthy neighborhood is a building block of a healthy civil society, and our social fabric is frayed today. It's really hard to do anything at the national level, but we can all do something in the building we live in or the block we live on, and it's not much harder than just reaching out and trying to get to know each other.
How did you discover that in your own life, or when did you discover in your own life that, you know, maybe you needed some work on this neighborliness skill?
Sadly, it was a tragedy on my own suburban street that got me, for the first time, even thinking about the question of how in America we live as neighbors today. There was a family down the street, a husband and wife and their two kids, a boy 11 and a girl 12, and one night the husband came home and shot and killed his wife and then himself. Soon after, the kids moved to another part of our town to live with their grandparents, and what struck me was that this family who had lived on my street for 7 years had in effect vanished overnight, but it seemed to have very little effect on the neighborhood. I mean, other than a for sale sign appearing outside their house, everything just went on as usual. And I asked myself, do I live in a neighborhood or just on a street surrounded by people whose lives were entirely separate from my own?
What kind of questions did you ask yourself? Could I have prevented it? What were the warning signs? Did I know them enough? Could I have helped in some way?
I didn't know this family well. I mean, you know, again, just to say hi and wave as they walked or drove by, and in asking around, I found that no one else seemed to know them beyond a casual or superficial level either. But in looking into the case more, what I found was that on the last day of her life, my neighbor, who was killed, feared her husband. Their marriage was collapsing. And she tried 3 times that day to reach by telephone her best friend, who lived about 10 minutes away. What she didn't know was that the friend was out of town that day on a business trip. But I think that she may have wanted to take her kids and go to her friend's house to be safe. So she did what she could. She stayed away from the house. She picked the kids up after school, took them out to dinner, took them to the public library to do their homework. But then around 9:30 in the evening, she brought them home and told them to go upstairs and get ready for bed. That's when her husband came home. And the first thing he did was he built a fire in the fireplace and started burning their mortgage papers. So I think if my neighbor had wanted to get out of the house at that late hour with her kids and find a safe place, during the day her husband had canceled her cell phone service, and when he got home, he disabled her car. So I think her options were probably limited to finding shelter at any of the other 35 houses on our street, including mine. And while I'm speculating, I think the reason she didn't do that was because she didn't know anybody on the street well enough to take that kind of risk.
How did you change your life based on your sort of curiosity as a writer and a journalist about this story, and then turning it really into a critique of your own relationships with your neighbors?
I wanted to see if it would be possible to get to know my neighbors beyond a casual, superficial level and really get to know them in a meaningful way. And through that, if I could in some way patch together a real neighborhood. So that's the kind of quest I set out for myself in writing this book.
I used to live in the suburb of Penfield when my dad worked for Eastman Kodak. and we knew all our neighbors. I certainly don't have that vivid of a sense of my neighbors in many of the places in New York City where I've lived. So my life has really paralleled this sense that our knowledge of our neighbors has really gone down over the last 30, 40, 50 years. So mm-hmm. are you greeted with suspicion when you try to sleep over at your friend's house or clean a garage?
You know, I wanted to sleep over because I felt it would create an opportunity to understand my neighbor's experience of living on our street from inside their own homes. And surprisingly, about half the neighbors I approached eventually, you know, were glad to have me do that. And what I learned from doing this, John, is most of us want the same thing. You know, we really want to live with a sense of being known and knowing the people who are physically closest to us. We want to be part of a community. And the place I see this most often is in response to tragedy. I mean, we're talking about certain tragedies this week, but after a natural disaster, they come together and they feel this sense of connection and community. Though nobody likes the disaster, they remember the experience with a fondness and even a happiness because of the way they were brought together.
Is this something that a single person trying to sort of warm up a neighborhood filled with folks that are relatively isolated can change? Or is it really a team effort? I mean, I would worry that, okay, maybe there's some sleepovers and some dinners as a result of all of this, but in the end, nobody really changes.
You know, people sometimes say, oh, man, you're really crazy for trying to do this. But I don't think it's crazy. I think what's crazy is that we've gotten to a point in our society where it's totally okay to live side by side with somebody for maybe 20, 30, 40 years and not know them. And yes, I think individuals can make a huge difference. I see it all the time, and people tell me all these stories. And all you have to do is pick up the phone, ring the doorbell, send an email, say, hey, you know, I live down the hall in our same building, or I live, you know, three houses down from you, and it'd be nice to get to know each other a little bit, you know, have each other's back if one of us needs something in an emergency. And what I've learned from talking around the country about this is that there's a very good chance that the person on the other side of the door will welcome you in, because most of us want the same thing. We want to live it with a sense of community. Nobody wants to feel isolated. And, you know, we're all subject to that middle-of-the-night emergency when having a friend even 10 minutes away is a friend too far. I'm sorry you and I didn't know each other when you lived in Penfield.
Were you there?
That would be fun.
Were you there back then?
I was. I was in Brighton.
In 1960?
The next suburb over, yeah.
No kidding. So we are neighbors. We're neighbors.
We are radio neighbors now.
Peter Loewenheim teaches writing in the Department of English at the Rochester Institute of Technology. His new book is called In the Neighborhood, The Search for Community on an American Street, One Sleepover at a Time. Peter, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
And Pete, you definitely have something up there in Brighton, New York that one of our listeners wants.
This is Amy from Boston, Mass. But I got to tell you, I'm city, and there's something inside of me that would love to be a part of a neighborhood. You know each other, you look out for each other. I would love that.
You know, Amy, watch your plumbing up there in Boston. You may get your chance at neighborliness.
Hi, this is Amanda from Boston, and our amazing neighbors let us use their kitchen for 6 months after a city water main broke.
This is Nick from Cobble Hill in Brooklyn. I've lived on my block for about 15 years. The one thing that always brings us together is a big snowfall. As I start to shovel my sidewalk, out come the other neighbors to shovel. We all bond together and shovel off their sidewalk together.
Floods and blizzards, real icebreakers, I guess. What got you to know your neighbors? A block party? A tornado warning? Give us your story at 877-8MYTAKE. Send us a tweet at The Takeaway. Thanks so much for listening, neighbors, and have a great weekend. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for Increased Understanding of East and Southeast Asia.